This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. And if you watch television in the 80s or 90s, you might recognize this song. That's the theme song from the comedy sketch series Kids in the Hall. And if you watch the show, then maybe you remember our next guest, Kevin MacDonald, one of the co-creators of the popular TV series, going to be in Carrboro Saturday at the Dirty South Improv doing a masterclass on sketch comedy. But first, he joins us from CBC Radio in Manitoba, Canada. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you for having me. I'm Kevin MacDonald. I'm teaching a masterclass. Not right now, in the weekend.
That's good. Take your time. You're there at the CBC. I feel like Alan Maitland. There's a reference nobody's going to know. He was the co-host of As It Happens with Barbara Frum, the late Barbara Frum. You may know that, Kevin.
Yes, of course. Barbara Frum, Mark McKinney of the Kids in the Hall had a crush on Barbara Frum. That's not an amusing anecdote, but it's a sentence.
No, it is a sentence, and it's well played, I'd say.
Yeah.
You're going to teach a master class. You're not quite ready to do it yet.
Yes.
Although maybe you're ready. You're just not doing it.
Exactly. I'm ready emotionally, but physically I'm not in North Carolina yet.
How do you teach sketch comedy?
Well, this would be like, I think every few years I'm going to change it, put it a level up. What I'm doing this year is teaching the first level, which is sketch comedy through improv, writing sketches through improv, which is how the Kids in the Hall used to do it at first before we had a TV show. And then they introduced us to this thing in the 80s that we called computers. But before we got involved with computers, we had to we wrote it on our feet. We were a stage act first, and what I'm teaching is how to do that. Of course, Second City has done it for years. We didn't invent it. We did it so badly that we ended up doing it in a unique way.
And, well, I mean, whether you have a computer or a quill and parchment, it seems to me improv is not a bad way to get some of the ideas out, right?
Yeah, because there's a very thin line in comedy between writing and performing. There are some comics still to this day that have people write jokes for them, but I think most comics are funny, and when you're funny, you're writing it yourself. Like, most dramatic actors are dramatic, but they don't write stuff for themselves. So you have to write that. Imagine if you were a tragedy guy, like a comedian, and you were just tragic all the time.
It would be hard.
It would be a drag to be around. So, yes, I forget your question, but I'm going to keep rambling as if I remember it.
Well, here, let me interrupt you in the vain hope that we might make this interesting.
Yes.
No, but improv, I don't mean on stage necessarily, but as a way of developing the material. So off stage, you know, on Tuesday, you and the team sit around and they begin to sort of do improv, but record what you've done, and you keep the good stuff and you throw out the bad stuff. So by Saturday, you're ready to go.
Yes, that is more like how Second City did. What we did, because we were always writers, but we didn't learn how to write it down until the TV show. So what we did, we had a new sketch show every Monday at a club called the Rivoli in Toronto. We're egomaniac enough to call it our Cavern Club, which is the Beatles at the Cavern Club. I don't think Paul McCartney would even heard of us, but we're what we would do on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, meet in different combinations of duos. We'd come up with one-line premises. Let's say, for example, what if a man had toaster for hands? I made that up. It's not a good one. And then we'd have all these one-line premises, and then we would meet all week on a Saturday and Sunday, and we would take the premises that we liked, and we would sit down and talk about the beats, where it could go, what the middle of the scene could be like, what the ending of the scene could be like, and then come up with a couple, two or three jokes. And then when we had enough, we'd put up on its feet and write it through performing it, through improvising it. Yeah. I mean, it was just the five of us. And then we had something. We usually had seven or eight scenes, maybe sometimes 12, by Monday, and we had a show.
Well, let's get a sample now. This is Captain Calm from Kids in the Hall.
Oh,
here we go.
I haven't heard that one for a long time.
Here we go.
Full speed ahead. The ship is smooth sailing. Everything is going fine. No complaints from me. And I'm the captain. Oh, except for that iceberg. Better veer to the right. That's veer right. Let's miss that iceberg.
Handled that very well, Captain.
Yes, Captain.
Well, I just gave the order. You're the one who actually turned the big steering wheel.
Full speed ahead, sir.
Oh, good idea, first mate. I'll learn your name later. But you know, one thing keeps nagging away at the back of my brain. Why an iceberg in the South Pacific? Doesn't that seem odd?
You know, it does seem odd, sir, but we didn't worry about it because it didn't seem to bother you.
Do we have one of those large, flat, two-dimensional representations of the Earth's surface?
A map, sir?
Oh, no, but that should do for now. This isn't a full-scale representation of the Earth's surface, is it?
No, sir.
Ah. Then what we have to do is assume that a small distance on the map is a much larger distance in reality. Okie dokie. So this is where we should be in Tasmania, and this is where we actually are in... the North Pole. Now, Mr. Navigator, we're this far off course. How great a distance in reality does this represent?
Oh, 7 million miles, sir?
7 million. You're not a very good navigator, are you?
Kevin McDonald, the captain, and Captain Calm, a scene from the sketch comedy series Kids in the Hall. Kevin's going to be at Dirty South Improv Saturday teaching a master class in sketch comedy.
May I say something interesting? That's it's actually boring, but it's interesting to me because I'm boring. That scene, though, written in computers, that was sort of improvised in a way. Dave Foley and Norm Hiscock, our writing partner, and I were in our little cubicle that we shared. And we just started spritzing, as comedians call spritzing, talking, and we sort of created that scene out of nothing, and then we wrote it up.
How much do you go through, like in a scene like that? I mean, how much gets thrown away? Do you kind of come at it and pretty much have it all down the first time, or is there a lot of give and take over the time you work on it?
The time we were when we just spritz it, everything is gold to us, whether it is or not. Right. We like everything. We write it down, and right. Maybe a couple of things get cut, but that's it. It's later when it's been on a shelf for a while. A few days later, when we look at it, we go, "Oh, geez, not everything is good." And then we change it. That happens eventually, but at first, you love everything. Everything you write, you think is a hit single. Everything you write, you think is the greatest thing you've ever written, which I guess you sort of have to.
Well, and of course, the antidote for that in our business has always been the editor. Now, what happens when you're done, you know, committing your goal to your computer? Do you have an editor or somebody go over to a producer or an executive producer?
Yeah. We had a great editor, Chris Cooper, which is, for any Kid in the Hall fan, is also the name of my character in Brain Candy. Thingy there. That's interesting if you're boring, which I am. And he was pretty brilliant. And, you know, you read scriptwriting books, and they always say editing is the last draft of writing, and it really is true. You know, like, for example, Annie Hall, I think the movie originally script was more toed in order of sequences. But then he and the famous editor, whose name I forget, she's one of the best editors ever. I'm going blank. But who cares?
It's okay. Nobody's going to know her.
Thank you very much. They decided – they thought it was a little dry and wasn't quite working. So they decided to tell the story out of order a little bit. Thinking about Citizen Kane, how Citizen Kane's totally out of order.
Right.
And that's how the brilliant Annie Hall became. So really is the it really is, as they say, the final draft of writing.
Well, there's a brilliant writer whose name I'm not going to be able to think of. I'll just say S.J. Perlman, but I don't think it was him who used to write for the Marx Brothers. And
S.J. Perlman did.
So he's famously sitting in the audience talking with someone while the play, this is while the stage show is going on, and he said, shh, I think I hear one of my lines. It was because they had improvised the whole thing. None of it was his. It turned out that he'd written a script, and then they throw it away and start goofing around on stage.
You know, I'm so boring. I know who said that. It was George S. Kaufman.
Kaufman. It was not Perlman. It was Kaufman.
Perlman
well
did
done.
Write. They both wrote for them on different projects, but that's attributed to George S. Kaufman. I'm sorry for being boring. Sorry, don't go to sleep.
No.
What if people are driving cars and I'm making them crash because I'm so boring? Sorry. Don't crash.
I would get less than a dozen emails correcting me, so I'm glad you did that. Lorne Michaels did Saturday Night Live. He also produced this show. Did you feel like there was a comparison? It is sketch comedy. Did you compare yourselves? How did that go?
To like Saturday Night Live?
Saturday Night Live, yeah.
We grew up, of course, loving Saturday Night Live, but we also grew up loving SCTV, and we really grew up loving Monty Python.
Yeah.
And we saw it more like Monty Python, and if you see the show and you know both shows, that's sort of more obvious. Five guys playing women, British, Canadian, same kind of thing. And,
right.
That was definitely in our mind more. Also, even though not a sketch comedy, Steve Martin, the late 70s, was very much on our mind.
Yeah,
I would say, because his ideas were conceptual. And even though he became a major superstar, the first comic I think who could play arenas, he sort of did anti-comedy. So we always like the combination of comedy and anti-comedy, like Jerry Lewis and Andy Kaufman put together is probably Steve Martin. We always sort of like that.
Yeah, I mean this notion that, but then that's interesting because that suggests that the audience has a pretty good understanding of what comedy is, and so I'm going to play against your expectations, and that's how a guy like Andy Kaufman is successful. Would you say?
Yeah, and I was thinking a lot of people, like Tom Green was funny, right. And he came later, and a lot of people did that. But I always say this in my workshops. This is another thing that everyone says, but it's true. You can't break the rules until you know the rules, and Tom Green and people like that didn't really know the rules. They were just like going wild.
Right.
Whereas Andy Kaufman could do traditional comedy. He had perfect timing. He could write jokes if he wanted to. But so once he knew the rules, he broke them all the time and experimented with it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And when you go off the rails, it's funny once or twice, and then suddenly you're in the ozone. Nobody knows where you are. How do you compare this to – because I know you've done stand-up as well. How do you compare sketch comedy to stand-up in terms of your preparation and your approach?
Well, for one thing, this may not be what you mean, but I've been doing stand-up comedy. I think I'm doing it this Friday night, I think. And backstage, it's very lonely. I know that. And my approach is the same because I'm still in my hotel room going over my lines, whether I'm about to do a sketch with four other guys or by myself. But there's a heaviness to stand-up when you're preparing in your hotel room than just knowing you're by yourself. And it really is a lonely feeling. But at the end, if it does well, it feels excellent. So does doing the sketch with the other people. But the preparation is sort of the same, but there's a heaviness to it.
Well, here's you being funny all by yourself. Here.
Thank you very much.
Hi. I'm Kevin Hamilton McDonald, and I'm about to stun you with a remarkable set of facts. Years ago, people discovered the astonishing similarities between John F. Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln. Well, I, too, have made another eerie discovery. The astonishing similarities between my family, the McDonald's, and the airport movie series. Starring such wonderful actors as Dean Martin, Burt Lancaster, and Charlton Heston. Fact one. In the movie Airport, the lead character was a salesman who decides to blow up the airplane he is on so that his wife can collect the insurance money. In the McDonald family, my father was a salesman. Coincidence? Fact two. Airport 75. In 1975, a sequel to the movie Airport is released starring Karen Black. In 1975, my mother dyes her hair black. Coincidence? Fact three. Airport 77, a movie in which a large jumbo jet is trapped underwater. In 1977, I fail my superfish swimming test because I can't hold my breath 10 seconds underwater. I'm also fat and therefore cruelly nicknamed Jumbo. Coincidence? Fact four. Airport 79. The story of a bitter millionaire who sends a nuclear missile! Hey! I'm trapped!
Oh, sweet Jesus. The scene has crashed. I repeat, the scene has crashed. We need to get some help down there.
Hang on, Mr. McDonald. We're coming for you!
There's Kevin McDonald doing some stand-up from The Kids in the Hall, an HBO series back in the 80s and 90s. Going to be at Cat's Cradle at 7 o'clock on Saturday. But here,
is it 7 o'clock?
Well, something's happening at 7. The show starts at 8. I guess the doors open at 7.
Isn't it Friday? Do I have the wrong day?
Oh, you got the right day. Here it is. You're actually going to be there on Friday.
Oh, thank God.
I'm glad you're on this. If you had not been with me, yes. I would have made all these mistakes, and you would not have been there to correct me about your show.
Or even worse, I would have not gone Friday and gone Saturday.
No, that would have been that would not have been funny.
Yes.
Kevin Hamilton, are you named for the city in Ontario? No, let's leave.
I am not my father. The salesman's name is Hamilton.
Well, so talk more about this, the business of, because it does seem to me that when you're doing a sketch and you're working with other people, the kind of material you do is different. I mean, in terms of what you're going to write, you know, there are other people, you're bouncing off other people,
yes.
Different ideas. But maybe not. Maybe the way you write is the same, or the source for the funny is the same if you're writing just
for yourself. It's the same. The source is the same. So the same kind of ideas come, but it's channeled through a different road. It's channeled through, okay, I'm on stage. I'm doing stand-up. They're sort of expecting jokes and a different kind of persona. And, you know, as a sketch comic, playing characters, even though I'm not that much of a character comic, even the worst character comic in the world sort of does different characters and attitudes. So my first question when I started doing stand-up was, what am I on stage? What personality, what persona am I? Which was something I never had to think of before. Because you think of something and you do that attitude. So my stand-up at the beginning is a hyped-up version of me, and then I sort of do different kind of characters where I have a different attitude where I'm much more comfortable. And my stand-up is actually, even though I'm myself, I'm Kevin McDonald on stage, I'm sort of playing the part of a sketch comic who's doing stand-up comedy for the first time and keeps apologizing.
Well, that is it. I mean, you do have to adapt persona, and I guess the timing is all yours, so you can't bounce off of other characters on the stage. It's really up to you to kind of keep the beat and be your own metronome.
Yeah, and you know, he probably wouldn't want me to say this, but I don't think he's listening. He's very busy. Mark McKinney, the kid now who played Head Crusher, he's a brilliant character comic. I think he could, like, he's, in my opinion, the league is Christopher Guest and maybe Peter Sellers. I maybe that's crazy, but anyway, I think close. And as a result, whenever we did a scene where the five of us had to play ourselves, he didn't know what to do. He was always stuck.
So they're two different worlds in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I am going to now, clear up the confusion, because you are going to be doing stand-up Friday at the Cat's Cradle. But also at the Dirty South Improv on Saturday, I think. Is that part
right?
Are
you doing improv there?
No, I think you're going to be doing a workshop.
Yes. Saturday and Sunday, I do workshops there, yes.
So Saturday, Sunday, workshops, but you're doing stand-up Friday.
Yeah, I should know this. I'm sorry. I'm going to call you later and find out my schedule. What am I doing? Where's
my
hotel?
Our show should know this, but in about a minute, I'll take care of that. But right now, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Kevin McDonald. So good.
Thank
to
you
talk
very much.
You.
I had fun. Thank you,
Kevin McDonald, stand-up.
That was boring.
No, it was good. Cat's Cradle Friday, Dirty South Improv Saturday, Sunday. He is sketch comedy troupe Kids in the Hall. You may remember. And for more information, correct information, I assume, you can go to WNC.org. That's our program for today. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. As far as I know, I'm Frank Stachow.